welcome back to Living on the Edge. Join your host, Jake Beck, Product Manager at Ambassador Labs. This is your podcast for all things related to Kubernetes, developer tooling, API gateways, service mesh implementation, and more. Let's get into it.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Living on the Edge. We're here with Matthew Reinbold. Matthew, if you want to go ahead and give yourself a little bit of an introduction.
Sure, I'm happy to. Thanks for having me. As was mentioned, my name is Matthew Reinbold. I'm a 20-plus veteran of the technology space, and I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. My passion in the past has been helping Fortune 500 companies develop their API strategy and API governance, and right now I'm in the really fortunate position of being able to consult and do some executive coaching for companies, helping them get past some of their challenges, their blockages, their trials and tribulations related to APIs.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess my first thing that leads me off the bat, I always find it really interesting when people like go into the consulting area. Like, what led you into wanting to do that? I know you mentioned that you were like kind of leading like API like governance and all that. Is that kind of what led you down that road of like, hey, we're doing this well now, and now I want to help other people do it? Or what really got you there?
That's extremely perceptive. Yes. When I was at Capital One, where I was for approximately 6 years, I helped develop and grow their center of excellence. And we had a lot of interesting success, but part of the challenge that I found was that when I would go and speak publicly about what we were doing, when I'd share at conferences or when I'd write about what was happening, I'd get a lot of crickets. I'd get a lot of blank stares, simply because we had such a unique context for what we were doing that it was very hard to then immediately have a drop-in replacement for a lot of other places to mimic or replicate what we were doing. And so as I got involved and as we had success and as we grew to different areas of the organization, something that gnawed in the back of my mind was, well, how replicatable is this across the industry? What's happening in other organizations? And so after I left Capital One, that really became my mission, is to see what was going on beyond that unique situation. How were companies just dealing with the minutiae of stuff, and where could I lean in and help? So in some cases, yes, absolutely. The problems that people face as we kind of tinker underneath the hood are common, but it's the uniqueness that every organization has that sometimes they can't even articulate themselves that really makes every single engagement an interesting puzzle box, an interesting mystery to unravel.
Yeah, definitely. That makes a ton of sense. So I'm curious, I guess, like the whole like atmosphere of tech has definitely shifted a lot. I mean, it's no secret that there's been that tens of thousands of layoffs over the past like 18 months. So as a consultant, right, that gets really hard. But you also get to see things change almost faster than like everyone else, right? So I'm curious, is like, how have you seen things change in like, especially the API space, of like people investing in building it out? I mean, when you think back to 2020, 2021, there was just all this money being poured in, all these investments, just hiring left and right. And then it not even like just quickly shifted on a dime, right? It was like everything halted. So I'm really curious to see, you kind of have like that inside perspective of getting to talk to all these different people. So
yeah, it's interesting vantage point, being able to see across and get feedback across a variety of different institutions. And your point is extremely valid. Things have changed drastically. As a consultant, I've seen a lot of my engagements go from big picture strategic thinking, how do we create digital transformation with all of these very touchy feely nebulous long-term type of goals. They seem to change within a year to immediately getting into much more project-centric, tactile, clear definition of done type of results. And that goes for a lot of different job descriptions and areas of technology. It's not just the API space. I happened to see in my Mastodon feed just the other day, somebody pondering whether management was a zero interest rate phenomenon. And I was like, whoa. I agree, things are a little crazy right now, and there's a huge amount of scrutiny on the numbers and what actually needs to occur within the business and what is superfluous. But management as a whole being superfluous and possibly on the cutting block, I think is a bit of an extreme overcorrection. It's a weird time to be in tech. The stock market is up and salaries are up and corporate earnings are up, and yet at the same time we see these layoffs, we see this very conservative type of approach to a lot of budgeting, a lot of finance within companies. And I think we truly are coming off of a number of different shocks to the corporate system that we're still trying to wrap our heads around. It's still not business as usual, whether we're still thinking through how to deal with supply chain shocks, whether we're trying to reconcile how we fund things in a post zero interest rate world, whether it's how we're dealing with the upcoming chaos around the elections and how the information flow and budgetary policy and the outlooks, financial and otherwise, are gonna work on things. I mean, all of these things are kind of affecting leadership within these companies, and in the midst of all that chaos and all that uncertainty, people default to, locking things down, taking the most conservative route, making sure that they can justify things numerically, and a lot of that touchy-feely, more long-term, more squishy type of effort is swept under the rug.
Yeah, so I guess that I was gonna ask kind of something about what you said, but you kind of wrapped it up really well too. Of like, you mentioned that quick shift of like the long term, like strategic approach is like a lot of people were taking, and then it was a quick shift to just like project focused, right? So is it people are really just pushing out like this? We're gonna see a quick return on investment on like this project. Let's go with that, even if we start cutting corners or whatever. It's just kind of we need to get something out the door, and then I coming from a startup, like that's very much like kind of how startups work, right? Is we need to get something out the door because VC money only lasts so long. But what really gets interesting, right, is you look at the Fortune 500 companies. Like that's where we've seen most of the layoffs, right? Is in Fortune 500 companies where they are promoting that they are doing really well financially, but they're still cutting back. So are they kind of doing the same thing of like we still just need to focus on the projects and we don't care. This obviously still care about long-term like success, right? And that's very important, but they're planning for when, like you mentioned, the like interest rates come back down and the economy and all that kind of stuff, or
It's whatever is very tangible, whatever gives the hardest number. So for example, like, hey, we could put an API in front of some of this data that we've been collecting for the last decade and maybe make a new revenue stream out of that. Those kind of plans have been set to the side. Yes, that may be true. Yes, there may be a new revenue stream, but it's ambiguous. The line connecting today's uncertainty with a positive outcome for that kind of speculative work is not something that people are opting into. Instead, things like, hey, let's actually go and inventory our APIs and make sure that we don't have what we often call in my area, the variant problem. That is, multiple teams creating roughly the same type of API and subsequently reinventing the wheel and introducing inefficiencies and ramping up cloud costs and so on and so forth. Like let's focus on the types of efforts that will get us an immediate financial benefit with a clear ROI, whether that's a new customer or a greater efficiency or simply reducing the amount of overall risk that we can somehow tangentially quantify, and the other things. The prioritizations that are nice to have, reducing tech debt, making the developers happy because it's an exploration of a new language, like all of that stuff. It's not no, but it's not right now.
Yeah, so Short put, right? Kind of like the innovation stuff's on the back burner, and it's the really like, let's just get everything else that like is just working and maybe we can like quickly capitalize on as front of mind for everybody, which does make a lot of sense, right? Like,
Right.
got to keep the
Right.
revenue up.
Right. And I know it's having worked through several iterations of this kind of story, whether it was 2008 in the financial crisis or some of the humdrum days in the middle of the last decade, it can be very easy to demonize the pointy-headed middle managers. You know, like they're not allowing me to innovate, to create true transformation. And they've got a job to do too. I'm very empathetic, having worked with a lot of engineering leadership, even in the C-suite. They have their own objectives. They have their own things that they're trying to prove and trying to justify to their stakeholders. And it's not just a matter of trying to wring every dollar because they have mustaches to twirl and monocles to polish. These are dynamic systems, and the more that I've studied systems-based thinking, and the more that I've taught systems-based thinking, which aligns really nicely with APIs, the more I understand that we're all actors within these larger contexts. And so, be empathetic to your management leadership. They're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, no manager wants to lay off their employees, right? Like, no one wants to shut things down, but like, there's just always like, it's not always their decision. Like, that's one of the things, but you make a lot of sense, right? Like, we don't like as a developer and like my heart, right? It's like I don't want to stop doing innovation projects, right? Because like that's where it's the most fun. Everyone has the most fun, like going and just like, I get to hack around on this stuff and just see what comes out of it. Like that's super fun, right? Like I don't want to go grab the next Jira ticket all the time.
Right.
But
Well, and it doesn't even have to necessarily be stopping. If you're leading a team and you're doing API development, it can be something as simple as being aware of the current narratives within your organization, the things that are providing the animating energy to your leadership, to the executives, and looking at what you're doing and reworking that story so that it aligns and that fits the narrative. So, for example, if you have a job doing something like at a very large company, API advocacy, helping teams get started with APIs, explaining why APIs are important, possibly even doing training. This is a very common thing among larger enterprise organizations. If you get in on an elevator with one of your executives and they ask you what you do, and your story for the value you provide is, well, I do some training, or I help build communities of practice, or I'm involved with the API effort. Each one of those is a very loose, nebulous concept that when it comes time to look at headcount, that doesn't have a very strong pull for an executive leader. You can take what you're doing and you can reframe that as, creating strategies for cloud optimization and training developers on their effective use. Maybe that wasn't the totality of your job previously, but that tells a very powerful story that aligns with an organization that's thinking about efficiency, that's thinking about costs, that's thinking about budgets. Your job is still the same. You're still working with developers. You're still doing advocacy. But by taking a little bit of time and aligning the narratives, then when you're going through your quarterly planning, when you're talking about your goals for the year, when you're talking with executive leadership, they have the story in their head about how you are helping them. And that's really, really important. That slight reframing, that taking what you're already doing, but couching it in the language and the vocabulary of what the leader needs is very, very important. So it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. It doesn't have to be like we have to lay everybody off or you have to completely stop your innovation work. As a leader, just look at that work you're doing and aligning with the narratives that the leadership needs, the storytelling that the leadership needs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And I'm curious how like as like individual contributors can kind of like impact that. Like we think like soup like words are hard apparently today is, but you look at the roles like in DevRel or like evangelists and stuff, like those are very quickly to like kind of like people just push them to the side when it's time to like if there's any financial hardship. But there is oftentimes very much a need for those roles within your organization. So like as one of those like one of those careers, or if you're down that path, like what do you do to kind of proposition yourself against what you just said?
Yeah, DevRel has definitely been a position that I've seen affected. Another one that I've seen just with a company that I work with is they laid off their agile advocacy team, as if the agile transformation just was done and they could let those consultants go. In both cases, there was a lot of very powerful, important work going on, but it was still framed in the terms of 2022, 2021, where it's about growing the community or fulfilling so many support requests or doing X number of blog posts or having X number of views. In all of those cases, those are really nice to have and really interesting when what the business wants is growth. But now that we are in a position where growth has to equal money or sales or efficiencies or something like that. I'm not going to say all. I can't speak for every company and I can't speak for every group or discipline. But in the cases that I've been familiar with, there wasn't the change in the incentive structures for those particular teams. And subsequently, there was not a change in the language that they used to describe the way they delivered value to the company. The developer advocates or the developer evangelists were still talking in terms of number of website hits, number of hackathons, number of, and for the business, there wasn't the clear line. Nobody was connecting the dots on how, if we have a hackathon in Milwaukee, it led to X number of sales. It seemed like an exercise that was nice to have when money was free and flowing, but without the connective tissue between those things, it became very different. It's not to say that those things can't happen, much like my last example. The people doing those jobs need to think very carefully about, okay, if the business is now slightly skewed, if it's slightly off center as far as what it needs right now, how do we speak to that need? How do we serve that need? Maybe it's the same kind of activities, but the incentives that we're trying to drive with these activities need to make sure that they have a clear line back to what the business is catering to.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I guess taking a little bit of a step in a different direction. I know you recently did a roundtable about API futures. I am curious just like what your whole thoughts on like where we're gonna go in the next couple of years in within the API industry itself. What do teams kind of need to focus on that they might not already be? Just get your thoughts on that a little bit further.
Sure. Yeah, just a little bit of background about the API futures. I'm always conducting like interesting experiments, trying out different things. And at the turn of the year, I was seeing a lot of the people that I was consulting with stuck. They had the need to create change within their organizations, but they didn't have the kind of formal authority that they thought they needed. They couldn't command people to do the thing. And so they needed a different way of thinking about leading, a different way of thinking about creating movements. And so I wanted to conduct an experiment. Like, you know, it's one thing for me to talk about this stuff, but can I demonstrate it? And so API Futures was really an experiment in trying to create stone soup for the API community. If you're familiar with the story of stone soup, somebody shows up in a village with a stone and says, "This stone can make the most fantastic soup you've ever tasted." And the villagers, who are very standoffish and don't want to share what they have, look at him and say, "That's crazy." Well, he goes to the city square, he puts in the stone, starts bubbling, he pantomimes eating it. Oh, this is so amazing. But if only we had, I don't know, carrots. Well, somebody a little curious speaks up and is like, "Well, I maybe have a few carrots. Can I contribute?" And they put it in. And then somebody else says, "Well, you know, maybe you need some chicken. I got some chicken." Pretty soon, before you know it, it becomes a rallying point for people in the village. Each one is contributing a little bit and subsequently making something better and more worthwhile than maybe what they had before. But it's a seed. It's a ability to draw people together and create something. So API Futures was an idea like, hey, let's go and get the API community to talk about what's coming up in the future. Let's maybe reframe some of the negativity around technology and let's project what we could have and expose people to other ideas. And then as I was going through this, it became very important that I get outside of my own filter bubble. I know my friends and we all talk and I read their blogs and I read their Substacks and I kind of know what they're thinking, but there's a lot more people than just us. So every person that I would talk to and ask to be involved in the project, my first question was always, who else should be involved? And that really pushed me outside of my comfort zone because I was reaching out to folks that I never met before, didn't know before, bringing them in and then asking them the same question, like, who do you read? Who do you find interesting? Where do you go for advice? And then following up with those people. So it became a very stone soup approach to mapping the API landscape, getting people connected that may not have been connected before. And then at the end of the day, getting them to contribute to some of these ideas about the future. Some of the early thought was, well, okay, everybody's just going to say the future is AI and we don't even need to do this exercise. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. There was a few that talked about AI. But for the most part, the number of futures that we had was nearly the same, as much or if not more than the number of contributors that we had, which goes back to that context thing that I talked about. Like one person's immediate looming future is another person's surprise. They don't have the same context. They don't share the same frame of reference. So I'll provide a link, hopefully with this this show, we can provide some links, but I'll provide a link that lists out to the more than 30 people across the API industry and their thoughts and their ideas. There's everything in there from organizations finally getting their hands around their API sprawl problems, the fragmentation that goes on within industries, to AI, to how we've over intellectualized a lot of this API stuff, and we really need to get back to thinking about beginners and their needs, because there will always be beginners, and we can't forget about them. And just lots of fantastic contributions that if you have some time, I would encourage anyone to just go through it and see the breadth of what's possible, what people are thinking about, and just where we might end up positively in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said, it honestly makes me excited, especially the beginner part, like especially piqued my interest, because I've been doing this for only 6-ish years now, which feels like forever at this point, which is crazy because
I feel old.
I'm an old man now, I guess. Yeah, but it feels crazy because like from the day I started my like corporate career to today is like the landscape of just technology has changed so drastically that I feel like it's been ages and it's only been 6 years. But the beginner part really stuck with me because before I worked at Ambassador here, I worked at Target, and like very wide, Target's very tech forward as a Fortune 50 company that's a retail store, but very, very tech forward, which a lot of people don't know, very interesting. But everything, like as you start to grow an organization that size, things start to get really overcomplicated really quickly for really not any reason other than the fact that people kind of just start getting all their hands on things, and it's like, let's, and it just ends up as a complicated mess. So I really love what you said about just bringing things back to the like beginners, because even if you're not a beginner, a lot of the times that is just the way you need to build something, because that's just it's over it, you don't need to overcomplicate everything, right? So it's like, let's
Right.
just build the API as if it was a beginner, and it'll probably get the job done and maybe even be better than what you thought of originally.
Right. Right. Architecting for change is the big thing. And it can be somewhat oxymoronic when it comes to an API. We think, well, an API needs to be a fixed static point. Otherwise, we're setting ourselves up for a lot of pain, both on the producer and the consumer portion. But in my experience throughout my career, any place where you can optimize for change, except that even if you nail it on day zero, you get the market, you get the feature set, you get the granularity perfect, that will change. The market changes, experience changes, expectations change, and thus what was perfect on day zero is not going to be perfect on day two. And that's a humbling thing. I certainly was one of those API designers that went through the phase of just make it right. I'm going to make it correct the first time. And as I've grown older and matured and gotten a little gray in my stubble, certainly have learned that the ability to change is paramount when it comes to this stuff, even when it comes to something that you'd assume rather static, like an interface.
Yeah, I that reminds me, that just makes like the, I don't remember where I heard it, but it was just strong opinions loosely held, right? Like essentially, like have your
Right.
opinions, but be open to change, because this industry changes on a dime. Like we could wake up tomorrow and this new thing. I mean, it just makes me think of ChatGPT last year, right? It was like kind of just people kind of knew, but then just like one day, it was just everything everybody was talking about, way well outside the tech world, of like, oh, AI is taking over all these things. And it's like, it can just happen that quickly, right? Of like, and you need to be prepared for that.
If we can just wax prophetic a little bit about what a marketing genius level move that was. So I had been working with AI probably from a governance perspective since 2016 or 2017. It was some of that success that I alluded to at Capital One took us into new areas. We had success with the API program, and therefore, how do we approach data? How do we start getting it ready for some of these large language models? And in those conversations, I could see what was coming. But the genius thing about ChatGPT is that by putting it into a chat window, I didn't need to install anything on a computer. I didn't need any specialized expertise. I didn't have to fumble around doing weights on different nodes and optimizing. I could use something that anyone else could use. And suddenly that became real. That was the moment where a lot of speculation and a lot of going back to our conversation about connecting the dots between what the business needs and what you need to tell as a story. ChatGPT had a story about a powerful API, but making it real for people by putting it inside a chat, it became very real, very tangible, very quickly. And then it was everywhere.
And outside the tech world, right? Because if it's behind it, if it's just an API that has all this powerful like things, right? It's like, that's built for me and you. It's not built for our families to go and ask questions, or our friends, right? It's
Right.
built for us. But the second you throw a chat window on there, my grandma can go and like, she's the one to ask me about, oh, have you heard about this chat GPT thing? I asked a question the other day. I'm like, oh no, you're gonna get into a mess. But like, that's just how, that's like you said, it's like, it's a marketing genius, because I have my cousin's kids that are 10 years old asking me about it, and my grandparents that are in their mid 80s asking me about it. And it's like, this is so technical and it's just everywhere.
Right. No, it was a great move. And making it real to people, having it go from being a lot of theoretical probability and statistics and math and suddenly turning it into a response to a question, a conversation that everybody can participate in is huge. And so again, for folks that are concerned about their employment or that are going through a phase where they're feeling a lot of pressure to produce metrics or to show quantifiable benefit to the company, keep that in mind. What is the chat window for what you're currently building. If you're making an API, how do you present this to executive leadership where they're like, oh, this is actually moving the needle. We need to look somewhere else for budget reduction, headcount reduction, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. I think that makes a ton of sense. I guess I got one more question for you is like where on the change thing you said like planning for the change is the best thing. As you said, you've learned through your time in the industry now is like you thought you'd be able to get it from the day one. Like how do you build that into your planning when you're building something new of like preparing for that change? Like what's your approach to doing that?
It's making sure that I have established feedback cycles that I'm going back and that I'm making sure that what I'm doing is delivering something in an MVP manner so that I can get the feedback so that I can subsequently incorporate that again back to my project and do gradual course correction. For anybody that follows agile methodology, this is exactly what is being espoused. But as I go into the industry and I start working with these large corporations, when they have a month-long lead time before they can produce the user stories that then subsequently go into some kind of bureaucratic backend system to get prioritized, and like you're nodding your head, I'm sure your audience is probably nodding their heads. Like you take the immediacy of feedback, incorporating the feedback to fix a flawed execution. The faster you can do that, the better off you are because every execution is going to be flawed in some way. There's always going to be a mark that is missed. And so the faster you can incorporate that feedback, the better off you are. And that's oftentimes more than just your software development lifecycle. That's not just getting stuff to the cloud. It's not just getting the sign-offs and the gates and the approvals, although that is part of it. Be aware of what that process is like. But it's also what mechanisms do you have to make sure that you're getting signal? If you're analyzing that signal, you're incorporating that signal. If your only signal is, I have a Jira ticket, I'm implementing it, it was accepted, now I'm taking the next Jira ticket, signing off. Like that perhaps is fine for an entry-level developer, but as soon as you get one level up on that management, how are you ensuring that what's coming in is aligned with the stakeholder expectations? How are you subsequently going and finding out after something is launched whether it meets their needs? Are you looking at logs? Are you looking at metrics? What are your processes for making sure that you are connected and iterating through that process? And a lot of times folks are just like, I just do what they tell me to. It's like, okay,
Yeah,
that's problematic.
I definitely like learned that a lot more as I grew a little bit and then like took more of a product-y role. It was like learning that the like inputs from end users or if your end user is another developer or someone going through a retail shop or whatever you are building, like the inputs from them are so much more meaningful than the outputs because like we could be like development is always ahead of like what's actually being like done, like being used, right? Because they're always building something new, so they're always ahead. But being able to course correct when they're still building something and being like, oh, well, the last two things we've built haven't really gotten touched, but there's this other area, like being able to like take those inputs is vastly more like valuable than just continuing to output and kind of forget. Like merge to main and forget is not a good strategy.
Well, yeah, and I understand sometimes getting a hold of stakeholders, especially for APIs, you might be several levels removed from a final product that is in stakeholders' hands. But even in those cases, are you looking at log files to see which features are used more than others? Are you looking at the launch numbers to see how quickly people adopt a new paradigm or a new route through a system that perhaps uses some of your APIs? Like, are you actively seeking signals, however they may manifest? That's really important.
No, I love that. It's as we continue to grow, that makes me happy because that's just so important to my like day-to-day job right now is like making sure we're getting like the right signals. And if you're getting the wrong signals, like getting those soon enough that you can course correct, right? Like,
Absolutely.
so awesome. Well, we are running out of time here, Matthew. We really thank you for your time. If you want to give a shout out to where people can reach you, we'll also attach it to the podcast upload, but go right ahead.
Sure. Well, first, thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate this. This has been fun. And thank you to your audience. Thank you for the attention. I know it's a crowded landscape. You could have been doing Netflix or Facebook right now, but instead you're listening to me. So thank you very much. If you want more from me, check out MatthewReinbold.com. It's spelled exactly like it appears in the podcast or show description. You can find links from that to all kinds of different things, including my API newsletter. That's located at netapinotes.com. Plenty of thoughts and evergreen analysis is posted there, and just posted another 2,000 words on REST being a buzzword and why maybe that's not such a big deal. For folks that are interested and need something to occupy a few minutes.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Have a good day, everybody.